Hello, welcome to the Creative Writing Life podcast. I'm Justin Sloan.
And I'm Paul Zeidman. I am very happy to introduce our special guest today. My God, this credit is extremely, the list of credits and job titles is so long. I hope I can keep my breath for going through this. She's been a writer, screenwriter, creative development, co-creator, producer, and host of another podcast, which we don't hold against her, as so executive assistant to a well-known director. Oh my God, she's just all over the place. Victoria Mallet, welcome to the Creative Writing Life podcast.
Hey, Paul and Justin, thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Wonderful, wonderful. And also for those who have been following along, Justin's back. He's been absent the past couple of weeks.
Hey.
He's got his own thing going on, so it's just been me holding down the fort, but he was able to make it today, to which I say, thank goodness for that. All right, so for
Yeah, I was
regular
happy to be
viewers and
here.
listeners of the show, we like to start off the program talking about things we may have read or watched lately. Justin, do you want to kick things off?
Sure. I have been obsessed with all things Mike Flanagan. So people who don't know what that means, he's the one who's responsible for Midnight Mass, Fall of the House of Usher, Haunting on House Hill, all that kind of stuff. And it's amazing. I'm just torn, not torn, I'm like amazed and just blown away by the character development and the way that he approaches every one of those shows. So I started with Fall of the House of Usher and fell in love. And then people just kept telling me, you gotta watch this, you gotta watch this. So I've gone into rabbit holes lately. So if you all, if anybody hasn't watched those, I highly recommend.
You're getting your money's worth out of your Netflix account, is what it sounds like.
Oh my God,
I
yes,
would highly
finally.
recommend Bly Manor. Highly recommend
Okay,
Haunting
I'm
of
starting
Bly
on that one
Manor if you
now.
haven't seen it yet. Okay, great.
Yeah, that's
I love
next
that
on my
one.
list. Yeah, exciting.
Fantastic. I've been very busy. It's also been I'm in San Francisco and it's been very rainy the past couple of days, so I've been kind of stuck inside. I've really been going through a lot of things. I watched Maestro, also on Netflix. I liked it. I thought Bradley Cooper did a great job. I liked the directing more than I liked the characters, but I think Carey Mulligan was the best part of the movie. And I can see why it was nominated for all the things that it got. I also just last night I watched Poor Things, which it was weird. That's the best way I could describe it. I thought it was visually, it was fantastic, and Emma Stone did a fantastic job. I can see why she's nominated as well. I'd wanted to watch this for a while. I watched Still, which is the Michael J. Fox documentary on Apple TV, and that was fascinating to see. I mean, there were some things about his background and his situation that I did not know, and it was just it's a very moving and impactful story to see, especially all of the stuff that's him like in the past couple of years. And I finally got around to watching it. I heard so many good things about it, also on Netflix. The animated series, limited series called Blue Eye Samurai. And I'm still working my way through it, but I love it. It is so good. It is just, I mean, I love that period of Japanese history, but the characters and the voice work and the animation, it's just all combination is just fantastic stuff. So that's what I've been watching. I definitely recommend Blue Eye Samurai. Victoria, what about you?
Last night, I watched Rustin with Coleman Domingo, and I can definitely see why he got his respective Oscar nod for that one, because I think there was such a trap with that part of just kind of being like this walking, talking, like philosophy quote, and he just did such a beautiful job of inhabiting the character and making him a real person. And he, like, I don't think enough of us know who Bayard Rustin is, and to learn that he was a man who was behind the March on Washington. And that was the event we got. I Have a Dream from Martin Luther King from. So that was really interesting and entertaining and felt very, poignant. And then I have been watching Lessons in Chemistry because I was waiting to finish the book. So I finished the book over Christmas, and now I've been watching the series on Apple TV.
That's great. That is fantastic stuff. Okay, so Victoria, let's talk about you just a little bit. Okay, the one thing I do want to get out of the way. So it said New Jersey native and then a Tar Heel. So if I have to know, because I'm also from New Jersey, I have to know where, and I'm gonna lay even money, it's the northern half of the state.
Okay, so this is going to be maybe controversial. I always say I'm from Central Jersey, which
Oh,
some people
okay.
say doesn't exist. It's either north or south, but Monmouth County, so by like Red Bank and Freehold is where I grew up. I grew up in this little horse town,
That's
which
north.
and then everyone's like, horse town. Okay. I think it's central, but yeah, no, but like I also hear you like this. I feel like to me there's like the New York, New Jersey and the Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and I'm definitely the New York, New
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because I'm from right outside of Philadelphia. So to me, that's all South
Okay.
Jersey.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, all right. So, okay. So New Jersey and then to North Carolina, sounds like. So tell it. So since this is the Creative Writing Life podcast, we always like to ask our guests. So were you the type, you know, you were the type of kid who was just writing nonstop? You loved it. You couldn't get enough of it. Or were you kind of like, I don't like writing, but then somewhere down the line, maybe, you know, high school or college or afterward, you discovered, hey, I actually like writing. I'm actually pretty good at this. I want to see what I can do with it. Which camp do you fall into?
I think I primarily fall into the former. I mean, I always joke I came out of the womb wanting to tell stories. And I always grew up writing. I was joking. I was listening to other episodes of your podcast, and it just reminded me of, I think the first thing I like, my first writing memories, I'd seen the animated Hercules when I was very young. And I made my grand, I dictated a story to my grandmother, and I made her illustrate it, of like basically a fan fiction where Hercules and Meg go to Olympus naturally on a plane. So I feel like that the urge to tell stories, as one does. So that was always in my, like, in who I was and my essence. But I grew up actually acting and doing a lot of theater, I think, because just that was a little more easily accessible growing up in the Dirty Jurors and being right outside New York City. And then I always was writing, just always writing stories. But for the longest time, it was something very private to me. I would never let anyone read it, because for me, it felt like getting naked, like bearing a piece of my soul. And it wasn't until my time at Chapel Hill in college, I took my first screenwriting class. And at first I was like, I don't like this is a lot. And now, like, I have problems when I'm writing short stories or like more like narrow, like kind of like conventional prose. I'm like, oh my God, like I have to describe everything. I don't. Like, you get so used to the economy of screenwriting. Mm-hmm. And again, but I was still doing, you know, I was first couple of years in this industry, I was taking whatever I could get. I was acting, I was writing, I was working in casting, I was talent coordinating, I was on set, I wasn't on set. And it wasn't until I got my job with Ivan Reitman that I realized I could actually do this. And I was in, you know, because I had the great fortune of being in a lot of creative meetings with Ivan and with the writers we would develop projects with. And it was just such an amazing education and kind of boot camp on what makes a good writer. And then while I was working for Ivan, I got this idea for a screenplay, and I signed up for a UCLA extension course just for like the accountability to get it written. And then I sent it to a manager friend, and he said, I want to go out with it this weekend. And I was like, Oh, I guess I'm a real writer now. Like, oh, okay. And then like a lot of big A-listers read it. No one's bit yet. But so it was, I was like, oh, I guess, okay. I guess this is the thing.
Okay. So let's take a few steps back. So, okay. So you went to school in North Carolina. So what was it that instigated you, said, hey, I want to go to Los Angeles? And did you like, I want to work in showbiz. You know, that's where you got to go. I mean, as opposed to having been, grew up right outside of New York. So like, what was the impetus for like, okay, I'm going west.
I'm going to LA. No, it was, I always thought I'd move to New York after college, but Chapel Hill had this program where they take 20 of their graduating seniors in the film department and place them in internships out here in Los Angeles. And I was accepted into that program, and I was like, okay, let me give this a shot. Let's see. And then that was 10 years ago. So
okay.
Let's just see what happens. And now I'm here.
No, that's great. That's great. Okay. So you mentioned that you worked executive assistant to Ivan Reitman at his mm-hmm. Montecito Picture Company. So I'm sure a lot of people listening mm-hmm. like, oh my God, that's like a dream job. Like working for an A-list director. He's worked with so many stars and he's worked on so many big movies. Like, how did that come about? Did you have to interview it, or like, did someone say, hey, I think you'd be great for this job?
It was funny. I was looking for, you know, I was just doing the normal thing when you do in your early 20s, when you're looking for someone or when you're looking for work. And I'd gotten with a couple staffing agencies, like staffing companies. And it was really random, because it was the first interview the staffing company set me on. They're like, Ivan Reitman wants an assistant, or he needs an assistant. He wants someone with personal assistant experience. And I'd assisted a couple other actors before then. Like, you should go in an interview. And I was like, okay. And yeah, I thought I bombed my interview with him. I had been coming from another job, and I screamed like it was. I was in Van Nuys, and I remember I had to get to Culver City and was screaming down the 405. And then again, like I walked out of my interview with Ivan, being like, "Well, whatever," like that didn't go well. And then I got a call from staffing company, being like, "They want to meet with you again. You sure? Okay." And then I went into the interview, and Ivan offered me the job, and I will never forget. I was so just shocked and surprised. And he goes, are you excited? I'm like, yes, I'm very excited. Thank you so much. It was like, I was just like, it like took me a second for my brain to wrap my brain around this opportunity. Cause I don't think I was the most experienced candidate that he saw, but he obviously saw something in me. And for that, I'm really grateful.
That's fantastic. So I have one more question, then I will toss it over to Justin. So, you know, a lot of people hear executive assistant and they always think like, oh, you're probably like the poor schmuck who has to go pick up the dry cleaning or, you know, walk the dog. But it also sounds like you got to sit in on creative meetings, and I'm guessing they probably asked for your input. Like, what were your job duties as an executive assistant? And I guess what were some of the things that developed as a result of that?
Yeah, I think the nice thing was with Montecito, when I worked there, even though I would have to charter private jets and there was an ever shifting schedule, I was always involved in the creative from day one on the development team. And so that encompassed a lot of different things. I was reading scripts of drafts of projects we were developing and giving my feedback. Like I said, I was sitting in on these creative, like 3-hour creative meetings, taking notes and kind of seeing how something is shaped. And I think that taught me so much about how to take feedback and incorporate feedback as a writer. I also had a lot of bandwidth. It was kind of like the rule was like, as long as Ivan's happy, you get to do whatever you want. Not whatever I want, but I had a lot of bandwidth. So I was able to, you know, I'm a huge comic book nerd, and I was going to these comic conventions anyway, because A, I was a nerd, and B, for my podcast, Your Biggest Fangirl, a couple of years ago, doing interviews, I was like, well, I should just scout comic books while I'm here. And that became me, like, kind of evolved into me running comic book tracking for Montecito. And I got to create all these amazing relationships with big comic writers like Donny Cade and these amazing independent publishers like Lion Forge. And then I was also able to bring in actors and talent that I was super passionate about. Like, something I'm really passionate about is I had a friend who may have like won an Emmy and a Golden Globe, and I got him an offer on one of our movies for Netflix. And then I remember we were looking for someone to rewrite a project of ours, and I was so passionate about Zawi Ashton being that person because I'd seen her on Broadway in Betrayal. And I remember reading in the New York Times that she was on Broadway acting in Betrayal, and then her play that she'd written was being produced downtown. I'd never felt like a bigger slacker in my life. And so I said, let me, oh my God, this is the woman. This is who we have to work for. And I really, or work with rather. And I really had to fight for her. But then it was amazing because we got to collaborate for a while. And then it wasn't too long before she was announced as the villain in Captain Marvel. And my male colleagues were like, oh, I think Dorian like knows what she's doing.
So. That is great stuff. I'm gonna have more questions about your podcast in a minute, but I don't want to.
Sure. Yeah.
The whole thing. I'm gonna toss it over to Justin.
Muted. I think that the whole route of like creative execs, creative development, all this stuff sounds really cool, and it's a path that I was looking at one point in my life before I decided, nah, I'm just a writer. So I'd love to hear more about like, that side of like how it. You think. People who are looking at these kind of routes in life, if they're thinking, oh, should I go creative exec, creative development, go become a creative assistant and work my way up? What are your thoughts on that kind of career path and what it takes?
I think I was really fortunate with Ivan because it was very much like everyone gets a say, everyone can bring whatever they want to the table. I think when you're interviewing for a position like that, I think that's really important to suss out as soon as possible. And I also think I would look for if you're interviewing with a company, I would also really recommend making sure that they're going or just seeing if they're going into production on anything soon, because then you really get to be a part of the magic. And that was one of my fondest memories was I got to go up to Calgary when we were shooting Ghostbusters Afterlife a couple times and support Ivan on set. And then when Ivan was like just so plugged into Video Village, and like I would bring him a snack and then he wouldn't want to look at me. I got to do all sorts of things. Like I ended up helping get massage therapists to the set on Bill Murray's request because he hated wearing the proton packs and just crazy. And like shooting The Breeze with Paul Rudd, which is like, it just kind of blows my mind just like saying it. But I think it's actually a really good training ground, especially if you want to be a producer as well as a writer, because not only are you there, you're not only hopefully in creative meetings and you're watching a script like develop and change, you also get to learn all the different roadblocks a project can hit. And then you get to see from your superiors and your senior colleagues how to navigate those roadblocks. And then I also think it was just so interesting too, just again, the assistanting of it all, where you're kind of given impossible tasks with less than 7 minutes to complete them. You learn how to think on your feet, be super adaptable and be super resourceful, which I don't have to tell y'all is a really important quality to have if you want to succeed in film in the entertainment industry.
Yeah, and I'm sure we have many more questions on that, but first I wanted to ask about your short stories. So did that come after this whole part of life?
Yes, I only really started writing short stories last year.
Oh, okay, cool. And it was, is there a strategy there, or is it more just like, oh, I have some ideas, I got to get on the page and get out there? What's the trajectory, I guess?
The strategy was, around this time last year, I had a meeting with my manager at Zero Gravity, and he said, try writing a short story. I just sold one to Amazon. I said, okay. And I had just finished a contract with a development, like in development with this like media startup. And I feel like I had learned about AI like six, like, and how dangerous it could be 6 months before the general public did. And I just remember being so frustrated about being a woman in the industry, and this story poured out of me. Once it was readable and my manager signed off on it, I just know how executives work, how sometimes they need someone else to tell them it's good before they believe it's good. And so I said, let me try to get this published, because that'll be a good cosign for the validity of the story. And then I just fell down a rabbit hole. I found this amazing website called chillsubs.com, like chill like cold and subs like Subway. And it was this amazing directory of all these different literary magazines you could submit to. And as I was looking for magazines to send this kind of speculative, grounded, Ex Machina-esque short story, I saw there were a lot of horror magazines. And then there were a lot of like flash fiction and comedy magazines and a couple of historical fiction ones. And I had horror and romantic comedy and historical fiction scripts. So I said, might be interesting. And also I realized it could be a way to reverse engineer IP for myself. Like, let me take a scene from all of these scripts, write it as a short story and see what happens. And then since March of last year, I think my work's been published about 14 times. So it's really exciting. I mean, I can't tell you how many rejections, like I can't tell you the ratio of rejection to acceptance for the 14 times I've gotten, but it was like very, very interesting and a really fun little kind of writing experiment and exercise to do.
Yeah, I've heard about that weird thing of optioning short stories. So now that you have some out there, have you all come up with a strategy for how to go about doing that, optioning short stories?
Yeah, I think, you know, we're taking it out. We take them out to, like, you know, I think the nice thing is the short stories are also different. So there's, you know, the companies or the executives I have a relationship with who might do well with the grounded fiction one, or the comedic one, who might like vibe with the comedic one, who might vibe with the horror one. But I feel that process has felt kind of stilted because of that little 6 month strike we had. So it feels like now in the new year in 2024, we're really kind of getting back up and running with that strategy and that process of getting at least someone to read a 1,000, 3,000, 7,000 word short story and going from there.
Yeah, so interesting. But so what do you think it is about that appeals? You know, you have this, probably two sides have seen it since you've worked in that industry more than a lot of us. And so versus, like, if you're looking at going with a novel that's like underlying IP and a short story, is that still like in that same vein of underlying IP?
I think so. I definitely think it's IP, especially if you can get it published, because then again, it's like the weird external cosign. And also, executives are really busy and they have really long reading lists. So if you can send them something that's, again, 1,000, 3,000, 7,000 words instead of a 127-page script, they'll probably read and turn around feedback on your piece a little more quickly.
Yeah, it's interesting.
And then I think it's also good for younger writers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that was what I was about to say. And if they option it, you can either fight to be the one who adapts it, or at least you can probably negotiate for yourself like the first pass of adaptation. But then I also think, if I'm like explaining exactly how the sauce is made, they can get another writer on it. And that's kind of,
right.
And again, they don't have, if they want to rewrite, they don't have to have a writer read drafts and drafts and drafts. They can read the short story and go for it.
Yeah, I think that's really cool. And so just focusing on the short stories themselves and not the adaptation side. I have a buddy who's big into that right now. She enjoys it. Do you look at it, like, what's some strategies around short stories? Are you trying to get into anthologies? Or are you just publishing the stories as they are? And do you think you'll do novels at some point too?
I don't know if I'd ever, I don't know. That's like so many words. I would love to maybe have enough to publish an anthology of my work. I think that'd be super fun and super wonderful. I would have to write a couple more stories, and I have a couple things percolating in my head. But I think the process for me over this past year that's been really helpful is almost looking at my script, looking at the market, and drawing lines to connect the two. And then I also, discovered some amazing literary magazines that were really exciting to me that I just wanted to be a part of. Like my most recent publication, right. I had a story called Her Night Off, published both in the Icarus Writing Collective and Metastellar Magazine. And that came from the Icarus Writing Collective because I love Greek mythology. And so they're a Greek-themed, mythology-themed literary magazine. They're like, issue 2 is the moon. I'm like, okay, the moon, let's go. What does that mean? What would my story about the moon be? And it turned out, and then like I dive into the research, and then I realized the moon in Greek mythology married an eternally asleep man. And I was like, well, that must be pretty lonely, especially when you live forever. And thus the short story was born. So I think I'm the type of writer who always does really well with a prompt. Like it's funny because I definitely see myself mostly as an adapter. I can't always come up with an original plot to save my life. So I think it's really fun, again, like scrolling through like these directory websites and being like, okay, this person does that. If I wanted to be published in that magazine, what would I write? And then also it was really fun looking, since I have this whole portfolio of scripts, kind of taking the scene out and seeing how I can have it live on its own and have it be its own, like, again, story with a beginning, middle, and ending, even though in the script it's just a snapshot of the larger tale.
Oh, so yeah, so I was going to ask is how you approach short stories. Is it, it sounds like you just said they usually have an actual beginning, middle, and end, but would you say that's to the degree that the scene would also, like the mini movie method where each scene is kind of its own thing? Question mark.
Yeah, I think for me it's a little, it can be two things. I think it's also, I think like with flash fiction, which is usually a story that's about 1,000 words or less, I think for me, like with the Her Night Off story, I really wanted to just capture like the loneliness in a moment and this woman who has a job or a duty that's bigger than what she actually wants and just trying to explore that as quickly, whereas with An Even Greater Woman, which was the speculative fiction story, and Crone of Kader Idris, which was my horror story, that to me was more like, okay, what's the beginning and middle and end here? How can I tell the most impactful story in the least amount of words? And go and just kind of going from there and trying things and, writing paragraphs, deleting paragraphs, staring at the blank screen, getting a snack, trying again, and then just rinse and repeat. Walking the dog.
Me, I'll turn it back to Paul. So you have this experience and you have a manager and you've worked at the development side, seen how that sausage is made. So what's your advice then for people who are looking for management or looking to get in with creative execs, and how does somebody navigate that whole world? Is it really just getting out there and hoping it happens, or are there events you can attend, or are there ways online you can get better in with the right people? Any thoughts on that?
Yes, I think for me, I was very much a networker. And I think I was lucky in my position at Montecito is that I also had something to offer, because I had the backing of this huge, you know, very reputable company behind me. But I think the biggest piece of advice is the way I think I have found success and made lasting relationships in the film industry, and I think it kind of makes you a rare bird, is if you just genuinely become friends with someone and you genuinely try to build a relationship and make it mutually beneficial for everyone, rather than can you read my script, rather than then I think so much of this industry can feel super transactional. So if you look for the people and the places to submit your work that you're genuinely passionate about, and if you have something to offer as well in return, I think that's what's always given me the most success, rather than I won this contest or I did this. I think really it's the long game, but it's building those relationships. That's the most important thing to me.
Oh, yeah. So, okay. So you alluded to this earlier, and I have to hear about this. So co-creator, producer, and I guess host of the Your Biggest Fangirl podcast, which, and it says, explore and celebrate pop culture from a feminine point of view. So, okay. So we'll start with the basic question. Marvel, DC, or anything else?
Marvel, Spider-Man, 1,000%. My favorite movie of all time is the 2002 Tobey Maguire Spider-Man. And my first internship in LA was working for Tobey Maguire's production company. Wow. And then, like, I remember, I was like, I can die now. I did it. Like, I'm done.
Oh, that's great.
No, sorry. I don't mean to cut you off.
No, no, it's perfectly okay. So what was the inspiration for wanting to start a podcast about comics?
Well, it wasn't just about comics. That was the thing that was so exciting to me and my co-host / dear friend, Kristen Chavez, is we had known each other since college. Both went to Chapel Hill together. We're both studying film, and we both had a lot of shared passions, whether it was Harry Potter, whether it was a parody musical about Harry Potter, whether it was musicals, whether it was the latest Marvel movie. And then it's so funny. I'm back in like a Smallville. I was so obsessed with Smallville growing up. So that was like my entry into DC. And I think we both felt like there were so many smart, dynamic women who have been so inspired and moved by different pieces of media. But I think a lot of the times fangirls are portrayed as Kathy Bates from Misery, and we were just kind of psychos. And as a very effusive, enthusiastic person, I understand that I think what Kristen and I really wanted to do is actually look at things from a very empathetic and almost academic point of view of what does it mean to be a fan, and how do women express their fandom, and all the different ways and all the different fandoms people get involved with, and how that manifests for them, and how having something that you're really passionate about, I think our culture kind of, you know, makes fun of us, might not be the best word, but kind of derides us for that. You know, you're supposed to be cool and not like something too much. But what we really wanted to do is kind of offer a counter narrative of like, look at all these things that your passion can do for you. Whether that was, we got to talk to best-selling authors. We got to talk to like one of the moderators of one of the biggest fan fiction like websites called Archive of Our Own, and all like the amazing works all the amazing stuff they do and that you don't really think about. Or we got to talk to Peyton Reed, who directed the Ant-Man films. So it was really interesting. To explore not just comics, and don't worry, we have plenty of comics content on there, but also like I had one of my actor friends come on being like, well, what's it like when you get fans? And just kind of trying to give a very holistic, non-judgmental look at what it means to be a fan and geek out about something.
Oh, that's great. So were there any like real surprises? I mean, talking to all of these creators, which is always a great thing, did like anything like really surprise you? Kind of like, oh my gosh, I had no idea. Like maybe because you were talking like with one of your actor friends, you know, because you always see, you know, that, you know, people who are like, oh, I'm a big fan of, you know, such and such insert famous actor name here. Like, what is it from their perspective? I mean, that must have been just so, you know, so different and so mind-blowing.
I think my friend, he's been on a couple of big TV shows. He loves that, like, he's like, for the most part, if you're respectful and you come up to me and you're positive, like, I really don't care. But it's, you know, now we live in this world of social media trolling. But that's really difficult to navigate. And so that's something that's really interesting for me to, like, think about. I mean, not that I'm sitting at my laptop being a troll about anything. But I thought that was super interesting. I just remember when we interviewed the woman from Archive of Our Own, just all almost like the legal work that goes in to protecting people being able to let their imaginations run wild and play with these usually copyright protected characters. But I thought that was really interesting too. And it was really legitimizing to those who love fan works and fan fiction, for lack of a better term, because it's valid. I this is also making me think, we got to interview the wonderful author Seanan McGuire, who wrote this amazing article now quite a few years ago for Tor.com, explaining everything is fan fiction. Like, all art is theft. Everything is fan fiction. Talking about, like, Hamilton, because Hamilton was really big then. Like, mm-hmm. Hamilton is basically a musical fan fiction, historic musical fan fiction. So just kind of broadening, because again, I think when you think of the word fan fiction, you think of, like, a woman who lives in the basement of her parents' house and, like, is on a computer all day. But rather, especially as a writer in this economy, in this time in the market where you are kind of, a lot of your job is going to be writing fan fiction, because now it's all franchises and spin-offs. And in a lot of ways, that's fan fiction. You're just paid for it, and it gets to be shown on Disney Plus. So it was a very interesting way to kind of realign my mind and, like, honestly reduce shame about being so passionate about Marvel and DC and musicals and Harry Potter, and like use like view this passion as a strength rather than something to be ashamed of.
That's a very good point. I wanted to ask, was there, while you were doing the podcast, did you kind of were you exposed to, like, any undiscovered gems, like things like, oh, this is great, and, like, then, like, you just can't stop recommending it to people?
Oh my gosh, I'm trying to think, because we ended it a couple years ago, so it's been a minute. I think during podcasting with Kristen, I really got into Hamilton, and because I'm always a bit late to the fandom party, so Hamilton had already kind of had its moment. And then she was really instrumental and be like, why have you, this is so your thing. Like, why didn't you check this out? And then I became a really big fan, actually, of David Diggs, who plays Lafayette / Thomas Jefferson. And then I discovered his amazing film that he made with his creative partner, Raphael Cassel, called Blindspotting. And then I always say Lionsgate should have, like, been paid. I should have been on, like, Lionsgate's accounting in 2018, because I was telling everyone about how much I love Blindspotting. And then I met David at a bar, and, like, again, I've met a lot of, like, famous people and celebrities, and he is one of the few that was like, hi, I'm a really big fan. But yeah, so I guess that was like a discovery of an artist that I've continued to enjoy and follow their work.
That is great. That's great. I'm going to toss it back to Justin, see if he's got any other questions for you.
No, not exactly, but I mean, some final, you know, words of wisdom is, I think it's great that we get a broad breadth of listeners here. So some who are early in the stage of checking all this stuff out, but based off of your journey so far, if you had to go back over again and give your advice, I would like that, hearing that little bit of advice from somebody, like, what would you give your younger self? And what would you tell them to do differently, or say, continue on that path and just lean into it, be happy?
I think I'm a big believer in the butterfly effect. So I get afraid. Like, well, I can't change anything. But no, I think what I would tell myself is start. I was so afraid for so long to put myself out there. And again, like, when I reached out to my now manager, I felt like I had to do all these things just to be taken seriously. Like, he repped a friend of mine. I wanted to develop my friend's show, and then I was taking all these meetings with the clients. And at the same time, I was reading all these scripts at Montecito. I was like, I think I can do this. And it was a very risky thing, but I don't think you can have creativity without risk. I was, and it was also kind of a conflict of interest, being like, would you ever be open to reading my material? And he was nice enough to say yes. And then that was a couple of years ago, and I've been on this wacky, wild, amazing journey. So I think as much as the rejection can sting, what's on the other side of it and what it can lead to is so worth it. And because I remember when I started taking these short stories out and I was submitting them to place after place after place, it was no after no after no, and you get so sad, and then my God, maybe I can't do this. But then when you get that first acceptance, it just means the world. So I think for me, I wish I'd started failing sooner. I wish I'd started getting rejected sooner and not protecting myself so much, because I wasn't really protecting myself. I was limiting myself.
Exactly. That's great advice. Yeah, I think that similar, it's like the anxiety is like, just ignore the anxiety. Just go. Just have fun. Yeah. It'll work.
Yeah, right. Or it's like, I think also a weird little mantra I say to myself is, because I have a lot of anxiety, is to be like, is this the Hunger Games? Is anyone going to physically perish? No? Okay. It's not life or death. And that's something I always say about the film industry, because I don't have to tell you all that. It can be really long hours, and people can treat like the meeting landing on Tuesday as if, again, like seriously a life and death situation. It's just like, this is not life and death. And it's not that it's not important, but we have the privilege that no lives are on the line here. So let's enjoy it and let's not kill ourselves. So I think that's something I've been learning too, as I've started really embarking as a writer, is like, as unfun as the rejection is, it's worth just, I don't know, being, especially for me, just being in the game and carving this path for myself. And again, that's why I think God gave me specifically Flea Market Flip. So when I have a really bad rejection, I just kind of dissociate to people flipping some vintage furniture.
It's great.
It's a great show. What?
I was going to ask, where can people find you online if they want to get in touch with you?
Sure. You can find me. I have a website. It's victoriamale.com. Victoria is spelled like the Spice Girl. And my last name is spelled M as in Mary, A-L-E. And then also I'm on Twitter at Victoria Male and Instagram at Victoria Male #1. Because there is a very brilliant COVID researcher in the UK who inexplicably has the same name as me. So if you find the account, and no, but I've been tagged in her post a couple of times. I'm like, I'm so sorry. I actually did not do the research on like COVID vaccines and pregnant women. Like the other Victoria is kind of crushing me, but achievement wise, but contributing to society. But no, it's victoriamale.com, victoriamale1 on Instagram, and victoriamale on Twitter. Or X, or whatever we're calling it.
I still call it Twitter.
I know, same.
Okay. Well, Victoria, this has been great stuff. Some very helpful advice. We loved hearing about all of your very diverse background. And this has just been so much fun. Thank you so much for being here today.
Likewise. I can't thank you two enough for having me. I've learned so much from your podcast that I'm kind of pinching myself that anyone could take away from the silly stuff I've said for the past.
That's why we do it.
How many minutes? Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Yeah, it was great having you. And listeners, be ready to watch, check out those short stories by Victoria. I'm sure you can get access to them. We'll share the website and the links, of course. And
yep.
Get ready for some of those to become
all the links to that. Yeah. all of the links to my short stories, everything victoriamale.com.
Awesome.
There's a free version of all the short stories. Yeah.
Great. Yeah, so we can check those out. I'm sure she'll love hearing your feedback on those. And and likewise, we like to hear feedback. So if you have any reviews you want to leave on the show, listeners, that's always appreciated. And spread word of mouth. Once again, this is a Creative Writing Life podcast. I'm Justin Sloan.
And I'm Paul Zeidman. You can check out my screenwriting blog, Maximum Z, at MaximumZ.blog. I'm still on Twitter because I'm not calling it that other thing, at Maximum _Z. I'm also on Instagram at Pez Screenwriting, at P-E-Z Screenwriting, just like the candy. Like you said, he's Justin. She's Victoria. I'm Paul. This has been the Creative Writing Life podcast. Thanks for listening. Stay safe, stay healthy. Most importantly, go write something.